welcome to the New Commons Project podcast series on season one of The Wire. Just a couple of notes before we get started here. We will not be offering a synopsis of each episode, so we're basically assuming that anyone listening has watched these, although we will try to avoid spoilers for later seasons. So first, let's introduce ourselves. So I'm Steve Grandchamp. I'm one of the professors of the New Commons course.
I'm Kristen Case. I'm also a professor of the New Commons course and director of the New Commons Project.
My name is John Messier. I'm also one of the professors of the New Commons course and, the honors director.
I'm Stephen Pane, and unsurprisingly, also one of the New Commons course professors, and I teach music.
Yeah, so we have a lot of professors in this class. Just one thing that might strike you right away. So it's a team taught class, and there is actually one more professor in the class who's not here for the podcast today.
Hi, Anne.
Hi, Anne.
Yeah. We miss you.
Does she have to do like extra work?
Yeah, I think so.
She should have to. I think so.
She should have to make us pig skins.
Okay, so we're going to just jump into episode one, season one of The Wire. And so one of the first things that struck me, so confession, I have never watched The Wire before. I know that's shocking and totally shameful, but this is my first time going through the show. And so one of the big things that struck me was it can be a little difficult to follow. And so as someone who's highly invested in 19th century British literature, right away I'm thinking to the multi-plot 19th century British novel, the triple-decker novels where they come out in three huge volumes, something like Middlemarch, where you have a lot of characters put into play, but you're not really sure what their relationships are. You have to keep a map of who's who and really sort of struggle to deduce what's happening in terms of the character dynamics. So I don't know, can anyone else like remember when you first watched it? Or are you all just like such old pros with The Wire now that this is old hat for you?
I just remember that I didn't get into it in the first episode. It took probably three episodes for me to really connect with The Wire. And I think part of it is what you're talking about, that those really figuring out what was at stake kind of in terms of the characters and their interactions was not immediately clear to me.
For me, it was interesting because I've lived outside of Baltimore for some amount of time, and so I kind of jumped in right away, but it was because I was latching onto the location and some of the language that was being used.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, but I agree, it sort of was confusing. At some point, I was taking notes. I'm an academic, okay, on the characters.
Yeah,
I was watching the show the first time.
I have a bunch of post-it notes on top of my DVD player right now, so there's like six post-it notes with various groups of people, so I can track it whenever I watch it.
Yeah, I fell into it right away as well. It reminded me of when I lived in the city, and it had an energy that I liked and kept me going, and the characters. But yeah, the plot was, I think I had little sticky notes on my desktop to keep track of who was who. Mm-hmm.
So Kristen, what did you think about it while you were rewatching it now? Like, is this your second time through? Or?
It's, I think my third, rewatching this episode was my third time watching it. And I found myself really thinking a lot about, I found myself thinking a lot about the way that people's individual ethical codes or beliefs were coming into conflict with the kind of bureaucratic structures that they are operating in. One of the lines that's repeated in the episode is about giving a shit when it's not your turn to give a shit. And that seems to me like a conflict that is represented, I think, throughout this whole first season, is people kind of, what is allocated to them? What are their options within their bureaucratic role? And then what is the thing that they feel called or compelled or like they want to do? So you see that, I think, with D'Angelo writing the letter and the way that that is manipulated by the cops. And then you also see that, of course, with McNulty and Bunk and kind of wanting to do it right, do the case right, but with not giving those, not having that kind of freedom within their bureaucratic constraints.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that's really interesting, right? Because it's so different from, say, other police shows where you've got the heroic policemen, right, who are so committed to the community, and they're going above and beyond. They're working extra hours. They're trying to solve cases on their own. And here's, nobody wants it. It's, not it, right? Here's a case that came up. I don't want anything to do with it. It's not my turn, right? And so really starkly portrays the bureaucracy of the police and sort of their motivation of what they're hoping to achieve, which is make it to retirement.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that greediness is what really, I think, distinguishes it, as you said, from other series.
John, what did you think now, going through it your second, third time?
Yeah, well, I rewatched it the second time. I didn't watch it originally when it came out, so I came to it late, and then I rewatched it. And now I think for this class, I might have rewatched episode one, I don't know, like seven times it feels like to me, because I keep going back to it. But one of the things that I continue to struggle with is, I think overall, just my discomfort with The Wire, right, and how I approach it and what I think about it. You know, when I first watched it, I was living in Washington, D.C., so it's pretty close to Baltimore. It's a pretty racially diverse area as compared to, say, Maine, which isn't. And I remember just talking to a lot of my white friends and how much they loved The Wire. They loved the story, the plot, the characters, right, the intrigue, the complexity. And then in a different setting, I was talking to some of my black friends about it, and they were not so enthusiastic, right? They had a lot of concerns, and I think some of their feelings were that, you know, this is now modern America's view of black life, right? So there's no heroes, there's no altruistic individuals, there's actually no normal citizens, right? Everybody in the show is in some way corrupted, and that's the view that I think they were concerned would be the portrayal of black life, which I get, right? I mean, because you're introduced to drug dealers as, you know, primary characters, the police are not necessarily altruistic in any setting either. And so, in a way, to me, it's wonderfully done, and this, I guess, terrifying portrayal of race relations in the United States.
Mm-hmm. It's easy to be white and be comfortable with all those characters because there are no implications, mm-hmm. right? But if you're black, you know, and with the kinds of role models there, it matters. Mm-hmm.
And thinking about it in terms of, like, urban representation, you know, like, we're out here in Maine, in rural Maine. I mean, a lot of people may not have had that experience that you've had, John, where, you know, you lived in an urban area. So this really might fill in some gaps in their imagination in ways that could be problematic. I think that's a really interesting point. Steve, what do you think? How's your rewatching been?
Oh, it's been really interesting. There's so much more to pick out the second time. I think that I've been thinking about it in terms of this class, and it was a point that we talked about last week in looking for common things across the works and culture and the idea of counterpoint. Okay, so I'm a wonky musician, but counterpoint is point against point, right? And so the idea with counterpoint is that you have multiple competing lines. Counterpoint is tough to listen to sometimes. A Bach fugue, maybe the most contrapuntal that we have, is a thorny piece. You have to really get into it before you're able to connect to it. In contrast, there are things that are teleological, right, where you have a clear sense of where melody is and everything else is accompaniment. You're told where to concentrate. So you know, I was thinking of Law and Order series as definitely the teleological one, mm-hmm. where, you know, there's a crime. You get boom.
Yeah, and it has to be solved by the end of that episode, unless it's the season finale.
Exactly, and I mean everything, and the camera shots themselves, right? We focus on who's glowing, and it's not a criticism; it's just another form of art, right? The Wire is very much these competing voices, which is why it's hard to get into at the beginning. It really kind of pushes you; it doesn't care about you in the way that you know someone who cares about your narrative arc, you know, gently escorts you along. Mm-hmm. And, you know, there are times when you get the feeling that the lines are, they're not going to come together in sync.
One thing that one way that I really noticed that in the first episode is the way that both McNulty and D'Angelo, I didn't think about the two of them as kind of operating in a parallel way until I rewatched just last night. And I was thinking about how they are both in the middle of these hierarchies, right? They're both kind of middlemen. And they both take actions that kind of have repercussions all up and down the kind of chain of command of their various, their different organizations. And in our first class, Heather talked really eloquently, I thought, about one of the things that's really striking about the show is that you're given this kind of parallel structure of these two institutions, the drug gang and the police. And you're, I think, asked by the show to notice, how, in fact, how similarly they operate. And the counterpoint structure really helps us kind of see those similarities, where there's kind of aspects of D'Angelo's story and then aspects of McNulty's story sort of back and forth throughout the episode. And we're really asked to see the ways in which those storylines echo each other, I think.
Mm-hmm. To continue the counterpoint thing, that fits well. In counterpoint, you have subject and counter-subject, right? So subjects work together, counter-subjects play off of each other, and that's exactly that idea.
And I think it's really interesting that, you know, I think that idea, that parallel, you know, that the police and the criminal have a parallel mind and they're actually, you know, very similar personalities. That's an old parallel that goes back to film noir of the 40s and 50s. But what I like about The Wire, to go back to Steve's point, is that it's working in a way that's not teleological, right? So when you don't have this 90-minute timer on it where you know that the bad guy's going to be caught at the end, I think it allows for that parallel to be explored in more nuance and with more depth. And so I think that it's doing that sort of age-old comparison in a way that's new and gets somewhere different than what we've seen before.
Yeah. And to Steve, to go back to your point, the show doesn't hold your hand. Right, it is not going to walk you through and tell you this is what's going to happen next. Mm-hmm. And you feel really comfortable. You're always sort of, you know, on the edge of your seat, yeah, wondering what's going to happen next.
Yeah, there were a lot of times where I thought I knew what was going to happen, and I was like, oh, okay, I see where it's going. And then it totally would go in the other direction and make me look stupid. Yeah. So I appreciated that.
Yeah.
You know, I was wondering, actually, Steve, what you would think of this, because when we get to Coltrane, you know, I was thinking we'd start with his early stuff, because he follows an interesting line where he's kind of, why not start with Ascension? And The Wire is the introduction. Ascension is one of the last significant works. It's complete free jazz. It's difficult to listen to. He lost a lot of fans over it. Mm-hmm. It launched some religions. but in a lot of ways, a lot of parallels with that album, which is kind of cool.
Mm-hmm. Now, I want to go back to Kristen's point, because it really got me thinking about the parallel structure of McNulty and D'Angelo. And I wonder, you know, the effectiveness of them to leverage and move those institutions. Certainly they have some privilege in their positions. Mm-hmm. But to me, both of those characters are very naive, mm-hmm, right? And I wonder how much that naivete actually plays a role in their, maybe it's their likability, mm-hmm, and so that we'll accept them, but also into moving the institutions, right? Because what would it look like if it was Stringer Bell and, say, one of the majors or the deputy, the deputy ops guy, right? I forgot everyone's name. that did that, right? Would it move it in the same way, right? Because would we respond to it in the same way?
Yeah, it's really interesting. I mean, I do think the show is, David Simon has a great quote somewhere where he talks about this is a show about how everyone is caught in a bureaucracy, something like that. But I think it's true that you really see in these characters who are kind of right in the middle that they both have a belief in kind of the way things should be or the way things should be done, and then they kind of bump up against the limits of where they are cut. And I think the fact that they are kind of in the middle makes them both more relatable. And that, yeah, that naivete is believing that they do have agency, that they have the agency, mm-hmm, to make that change, and then they encounter the reality that they don't, or at least that agency is much more limited than they thought. I'm also just really interested in the way that kind of the ideal and the real in general or the ideal and the actual kind of bump into each other throughout the episode. That, mm-hmm, that opening line about this is America, you know, that you can't kick a guy out of the craps game, even though he steals the pot every single time, week after week, because this is America and everybody has the right to play craps, I think is a great introduction to that theme sort of throughout, like that there's some code, there's some belief. And that the show doesn't, I mean, what's interesting is that that's seen as a kind of irony, but I think the show has some respect for that view, right? Uh-huh. That there's some, like there's a code there, even though it seems like a confused code. Yeah. It's nonetheless real and important.
Such an interesting point, and I think one that could potentially be explored in our later podcasts. So we need to actually wind this down now. You know, we're all professors, so I think that the 15-minute time allotment for this goes pretty quickly, but we invite you to join the students in the New Commons course for their continuation of exploring The Wire Season 1. So thanks for tuning in, and please continue with the series.
Bye.
Bye-bye.